Okay, hello everyone. This is Steve Ray, and it's the December 17th, 2009, first panel session for the Oncology Summit 2010. And this summit is titled Creating the Oncologist of the Future, and this is the first of a number of panels we'll be holding. This particular one is called Surveying the Landscape and the Possibilities, and represents one of the three main tracks that you'll be hearing more about here on this summit. Co-chairing today's session with me is Amanda Weisdom, and I apologize in advance that I can't be online for about 55 minutes, and then I've got to hop in a car, so I will hand over to Amanda by that time so that we can continue. And as Peter had mentioned a few minutes ago, this is expected to be a fairly interactive panel session this time with a lot of input using the chat room. So keep your fingers at the ready for input. We hope to get a lot of feedback today from all of you on a number of questions we're going to put forward. So just to put this in context, if you've got the slides in front of you, the ones that you call the zero-share link, you're looking at the title slide, which gives the panel name as well. You go to slide number two. This is kind of where we are in the agenda of things in the schedule. This is the first panel session, as I mentioned. We've got other ones coming up right after the holiday break on the other track, like the content track, the requirements track, which this is really part of the requirements track, and the quality track. And then we'll be getting, as we get closer and closer to the face-to-face meeting in March 15th and 16th, we'll be starting to synthesize things into more of a coherent structure so that we have something tangible to offer. If you look at slide three, I'm providing the introduction right now, and as I say, Amanda is going to be co-chairing with me today. Primarily what we're going to be doing most of the time is talking about some survey questions. And again, I'm not going to revisit all the details of the track structure, but we have one of the three tracks is essentially surveying requirements. What is out there today regarding training capabilities and what are needed, what kinds of things are going to be needed for the future. So the way we'll break this down today is Arturo Sanchez and Anthony Galton will be leading a presentation and discussion and question session on the current capabilities, the current training offerings, if you like, for oncology training. And Peter Yim and Elizabeth Florescu will be introducing us to a look into the future on what kinds of requirements might be needed further down the road. And introducing some of our approach with the Delphi, a real-time Delphi technique in the process. And then finally, Amanda is going to lead a discussion on essentially stepping back and looking at who should we be reaching out to with these survey instruments, which we're going to be deploying shortly. And again, soliciting input on the chat room would be great because we'll be able to record in parallel all kinds of suggestions on lists or communities or organizations to reach out to. Slide number four, just to give you a couple of other announcements here. We've agreed that we want everyone to be aware of the discussions going on in all of the tracks, the content, the quality, and the requirements tracks. So what we're asking you all to do when you post your discussions through the mailing address listed there, ontologysummit@ontolog.simtru.net, to please try and put in the subject line one of those choices, either just content or quality or requirements, or you can even break it down in a little more detail with content as present or future, et cetera, for the other ones as well. That'll help people if they want to filter out or focus on particular aspects. They can do so, but we decided to do it this way rather than having separate mailing lists because we were worried about both duplication of the same discussion perhaps going on in separate threads And this, we're hoping, will allow us all to be a little bit more coherent in our approach. So, there's also a link there which will take you to more details on how we're setting this whole thing up. The email discussion is one aspect of it. If you go to slide number 5, you'll see this is something we did which worked pretty well last year. Didn't get quite as much input early on in the process, but the one drawback of email discussions, of course, is you get with long discourses, threads and things, and it's hard to see where you're standing at any one point because you're losing sight of the forest for the trees. So what we're setting up are some, if you like, synthesis pages, and the champions will be responsible for sort of maintaining these various synthesis pages. So, for example, in the content track, the second link there you'll see is the present, well, the Summit 2010 Present Content Synthesis, maintained by Arturo Sanchez and Anthony Galton. They will be building a picture, which will be just evolving before your eyes on the webpage, of where we are, what we've found, you know, where the community's feelings are with regard to that particular subtopic, the content, building on essentially the scan of the present state. And similarly with the others. Now, those individuals named there will be responsible for inputting on the, if you like, the sort of the controlled content synthesis page. But we want to encourage people to contribute material in a pre-editor stage, if you like. And those are these open input pages you see listed alternately with each of them. So if you have, we'll be building structures, if you like, or if someone wants to present a, here's my outline of how things work or something like that, you can do that on the community input page if you don't want to just dive into a email stream. And then the respective champions will be able to build on that, take pieces of it, and add them into the maintained synthesis pages. So, why are we doing all this? Well, we're doing this because this way people that might, say, a month from now join into the conversation, they don't want to have to wade through 500 or more email messages to figure out what's going on. They can just go to these synthesis pages and say, oh, okay, so this is the way we're thinking right now in this particular topic. And even some of us who may get drowning in email might want to just watch some of the other tracks. If we're engaged in one track and not as much on another, you can keep an eye on these synthesis pages to keep track of what's going on. So that's kind of the infrastructure that we've put together at this point. And with that, I'm going to refer back to the agenda on slide number 3, or you can look at it on the session page, and move into the main part of this panel session today. What we're going to be doing again is several teams are going to be coming forward and presenting information to you all, and we really would hope to get feedback from you all on the chat room. It'd be a very efficient way of getting that feedback to help us as we move forward with some of these surveys. So, unless there are any particular questions for me, I would like to hand it over to either Arturo or Anthony. I'm not sure which of you two of you is going to be presenting the next set of slides.
Thank you, Steve. I think that I'm going to start. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yes, loud and clear. Actually, if you hang on just one moment, let me mute everyone because there has been some extraneous noises, and if you would then press *3 to unmute yourself, then you get the floor all to yourself. And if Anthony needs to jump in, Anthony would need to do *3 as well, and of course, yep. Steve and Amanda. Right, Arturo, could you test your voice?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, wait. Okay, try again. It's a *3 again. I'm sorry, just now.
How about now?
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now. Right.
Excellent. All right. So I'd like to direct your attention to the second set of slides that are available from the wiki page under Sanchez, number one, Sanchez Gossman. When you download the set of slides, the very first one reads at the top, Ontology Summit 2010, Creating the Ontologist for the Future. And the presentation will be about a survey that Anthony Gossman and myself have put together to gather information about two tracks, ontological curricular content, also quality assurance, the state of the art presently. So if you go to slide number two, which, by the way, the slide numbers are in the upper right corner, then you can see the two co-champions that are responsible for this presentation on these two tracks. As I already mentioned, I'm Arturo Sanchez. I'm with the University of North Florida, Jacksonville, Florida, and my colleague Anthony Galton, who's with the University of Exeter. By the way, Anthony, be aware that I will ask you to go over slides 6 and 7, so be prepared to jump in when we get to that point. If we go to slide number 3, the title of the slide is Tracks at a Glance. So for community members who didn't attend last Thursday's meeting, I'm giving you there a summary of the two tracks, curricular content presently and quality assurance presently, with the mission and the questions of substance that we are concentrating on. I'm not going to read them, except probably to say that the mission for the curricular content presently is to survey the existing provision of ontology education with regard to curricular content. And for the quality assurance presently is the mission is to survey the existing forms of quality assurance, such as accreditation, certification, and licensure, for programs, courses, and professionals. By the way, when we use the word survey in these two descriptions of the missions, we are not only referring to the survey as an instrument that you send to people to answer questions. So, which takes me to slide number 4, which is the survey acceptation that I will be talking about today. The survey acceptation in the context of the two tracks, it's a set of activities that try to gather or harvest information about the two tracks. So this particular one that I'm talking about today, Anthony and I are talking about today, is the one that will be soon published on the web to gather information from the community, that is to say all of you, or as they say here in Florida, all of you all. What I am doing is that I'm going to show you screenshots of the current prototype of the survey. We want to put it as soon as possible. And what we are doing today is soliciting feedback from the community on the survey questions that we are proposing. So if you go to slide number 5, you will see that slide number 5 contains a screenshot of page 1 of the survey. You might need to maximize the window to read that properly. So we start trying to characterize three or four, if you will, classes of institutions with respect to their emphasis on ontology-centered concepts. So the first one refers to, when it says, my institution offers a program which is ontology-centered. That means that the institution actually offers either a degree or certificate or whatever they call it, specifically on ontology. It could be, for instance, ontology engineering, a master's of science in ontology engineering. So that would be a program that is ontology centered. It is also possible to use the second button there, that the institution does not offer an ontology centered program, but does offer courses that are ontology centered. So, for instance, your institution might have a Master's of Science in Software Engineering, and you might have a course that is called, you know, Knowledge Representation in Software Engineering or Knowledge Management in Software Engineering or something like that. The third one would be my institution does not offer a program which is ontology-centered, does not offer a course that is ontology-centered courses, but does offer courses that discuss ontology-centered concepts. So an example of that would be a Master of Science in Software Engineering, and then there is a course called Artificial Intelligence Applications in Software Engineering, and there is a part of the course that talks about knowledge representation, and then they talk about ontology. So, of course, for completeness, we needed to include none of the above, but, of course, if you click on none of the above, probably you're not going to be of help in this information gathering activity. So, interestingly enough, Anthony and I were preparing earlier drafts of this survey, we realized that I was using terminology that didn't have the same meaning to Anthony, which is a kind of an introspective example of the use of ontologies or controlled vocabularies, if you will. So I'm going to ask, now I'm not sure. Anthony, can you tell me if you will be able to go over slides 6 and 7 if you have them there? Anthony?
Star 3, Anthony.
Are you there?
We can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, Anthony, can you speak up? No?
Should I move on?
I can hear something. Is that Anthony?
I'm speaking, but...
Yes, I can. We can hear. So we
can
barely just hear you now.
Right.
I was wondering if you were on cue, as they say, when you're a DJ, to explain or go over slides 6 and 7.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
take it away then.
As Arturo said, we found we were using terms in different ways, and so because I'm from the UK and we have somewhat different terminology, so one thing which I think must form a small sort of part of this survey, if you like, just to help to make sure that we know what we're talking about, is people need to somehow declare their terminology. So on slide 6, we put a note to this effect that there is this scope for possible confusion, and so one thing which we would be grateful for people who, well, we're going to be using the US terminology in the summit as far as possible, so people who are from other countries and who use different terminology, it would be interesting to hear if, you know, if there are differences there so that we are aware of possible misunderstandings and so on. Moving on to slide 7, what on the first bullet point there, I've simply repeated what Arturo had on the first page of the survey a couple of slides further back. So the way we plan to use these, as we understand by a program, it's a collection of what we call curricula elements which lead up to the award of some degree or certificate, some sort of qualification. There's a program of study, effectively. And the individual coherent units within that are what are called courses. Now, that, I understand, is the standard US terminology for these things. In the UK, which is what I can speak from my own experience, we get a number of variant terminologies. The word course, if it's used, when it is mainly used, if it's used at all, as synonymously with the US program. But of course, we also use the word program, although we spell it differently. what in the US are called courses and normally in UK institutions called either units or modules. They used to be called courses in many places, and that term has generally been abandoned simply because of confusion with the use of the word course to mean a program. But in the informal speech, we still often, unfortunately, we use the word course in that sense. So the confusion, you know, there's lots of scope for confusion. So where in the US terminology we're using, we have program and course. In UK terminology, we have either program or course and unit or module. And of the four possible ways of combining those, I have found examples of British universities which use all of them. So it is actually fairly chaotic. And I don't know what happens when you move to other English-speaking countries outside the UK or the US. And, of course, then there are countries which have other languages where the terminology to look at, consider there. So this is basically just a kind of health warning, if you like, that we need to be careful that we know what we're talking about. And so for that reason, we will always use the program for the larger element and course for the units which go to make it up. So I think that's all I need to say now on those slides. I'll hand back to Arturo.
Okay, thank you, Anthony. Can you hear me, Peter?
Yes.
Okay, good. So going now to slide number 8, which is page number 2 of the survey, then you can see different questions that would help us identify the program, the type of program, and since there is a difference between, you know, like a degree or a certificate, then in the case that it's not a degree, then we want to know what is the level, and what is the type of degree that is being offered. Slide number 9, which is still page number 2 of the survey. When the program does not offer a degree, then we'd like to know whether it's undergrad, grad, etc. And of course, again, it doesn't apply just for completeness. I opted for not introducing any conditional branching in the survey just because it's easier for me to put it together that way. Otherwise, I felt that I was going back to programming in Fortran.
Arturo.
Arturo,
there's a question, I believe.
Yes, thank you, Peter. This is Todd Schneider. Arturo, I'm sorry if I missed it, but is this a survey geared just for the U.S. schools?
No. That's exactly what Anthony and I were trying to, the point that we were trying to make, not just for the U.S. schools, no. This is supposed to be, you know, worldwide as far as we are concerned.
Oh, good, good. Thank you.
Okay, good. And by the way, Todd, I understood the suggestion that you offered the bulletin board and I'm sorry, the chat room, and we can continue the dialogue. By the way, the only restriction is that I need to leave 10 minutes before 3 p.m. EDT because I have another call. Going back to slide number 10, which is page 3 of the survey, finally we want for respondents to identify the institution. Where are they located, which kind of answers Todd's question again. And then name of the unit within institutions such as department, school, college, etc. And then a couple of web references for the institution as a unit. Slide number 11, it starts covering the quality assurance part of the survey. And then we start with the institution, or sorry, the program, whether or not the program is accredited, and then if it is, then include the accreditation body. And we take the opportunity to ask respondents whether or not they are aware of organizations that certify ontologists as professionals, and then we are leaving the space there to do that. Slide number 12, which is page 5 of the survey, Generic, please include any relevant comment related to ontology content and quality assurance. You are aware of that it's not covered by the questions in this survey, so that's a kind of a free-form answer there. And then finally, the contact information should we need to get in touch with the person again. So that kind of concludes the survey. I think that it's important not to, you know, not to make like a very long survey so people you know, are willing to collaborate, investing not a lot of time. Finally, the very last slide, which is number 13, I'm just summarizing how you can contribute with your input. Today you can say it or write it on the chat board, which I can see that people are already responding, and I thank you very much for that. Obviously, when the survey is out there, please take the survey or present it to colleagues that you know that might not be associated with Onalog at this time. And also, you can leave your comments later. I mean, you can kind of help us make this a dynamic process. And I'm putting a couple of links there that Steve alluded to at the beginning. The first one is where we're keeping community contributions on curricular content related questions for the present, and the second one is for quality assurance related questions for the present. So I guess we're going to have a window of time, including today's session, and then a small window of time to see if people are willing to offer suggestions, even to improve questions that are included in the survey, or to include questions that are relevant that we haven't included, then those would be part of the final survey that will be put out. So that's essentially what I wanted to say. I don't know if I'll give it back to Steve to determine what to do next. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, Arturo. Yeah, actually, I was just watching the chat and listening to things, and I think the two themes I'm seeing coming back as far as feedback are, first, that maybe we need to make it clearer that it's not just universities, but various professional organizations that might be offering training. And the second one, which I think it was, not sure who asked it, but anyway, is that what if we know of stuff going on, but it's not our institution? Should we have to try and find someone at that institution to answer, or can we answer on their behalf? That's an interesting point, I think. Anyway, that's just my impression. So, all right, why don't we keep moving forward then? This is, again, Arturo and Anthony's survey is to try and discover what's out there today. What can we learn from? What can we perhaps aggregate or even include into a curriculum that we will produce? The next phase, then, is to hear from Peter Yim and Elizabeth Forestview, who are going to now project into the future in terms of what might be needed out there in a fairly distant time in the future. But I don't want to presume what you guys are going to say. So I guess, Peter, are you going to start that off? This would be the third slide set.
Sure.
If you go to the session page
right,
and download that.
Right, I'll give people a moment to bring up the slide and to check if Elizabeth, if we can hear Elizabeth properly. Elizabeth, star 3 to unmute, and please say something so that we can make sure we can hear you. We cannot hear you yet, Elizabeth.
Star 3.
Okay, I had to unmute myself.
Yes. Sorry. Okay, you are on. Fantastic. Okay, let's get started on this one. All right, I will start the covering slide. So, again, we sort of briefly explained what we were going to do. I, like Arturo, will repeat a couple of the slides from last week, and I will invite Elizabeth to start us off and explain the instrument, mainly the instrument that we're going to use. So, Elizabeth. I will move to slide number 2 now.
Okay. Considering all the suggestions that were made and what the group seems to be interested in, we thought to is a perspective on the market of the point of view of the educator and of the technologist. So we might even design three separate questionnaires which might have the same or very, very similar development, but the respondent would be asked to respond both the point of view of the person from the market or the educator or the individual. If some of them wear several hats, we would appreciate very much, and it would be very useful to the survey results that they fill out the questionnaire of all the three points of view, because they might be differently as an educator and differently as an ontologist itself, or like the person who is in the market and uses ontology or internet. The time horizons we are next slide three. The time horizons we already discussed. It seems that the best is to look at now. Is that development already happening, or will it happen in the very near future? That means 2.5 years, 5 years, or medium 5 years, or longer, or even never. Now, tools. Next slide. Tools and process for the study. We thought about the real-time Delphi, and I will explain later why and what is the real-time Delphi and what's the advantage of using it. So we can collect insights from this panel or for larger panel of experts, because you can suggest other people in your domain that you know who might not be part of this summit, but you would seek their input. So it would be good to have an email list, a mailing list, where to include the best thinkers in ontology. And you guys, you know your domain, so you know whose input would count. This is not opinion polling, this is expert opinion gathering. Now, the conventional Delphi, probably most of you heard...
Next slide.
Slide 5. Probably most of you heard already about Delphi. The Delphi began at the beginning of the 60s, and the idea was to gather expert opinions in the sense of getting a kind of a consensus, or as close as possible of consensus, for determining certain strategies. They could be used in scenarios or really for implementation or design of strategies and policies. There were thousands of Delphi studies done in absolutely all kinds of domains, so it's not even necessary to enter that. Next slide. One issue with the Delphi was that in order to get consensus, it had to run several rounds. In the first round, usually there were open-ended questions, and those were distilled by a certain panel or steering committee, fed back to the panel, they had to rate, and then again the most important ones or the less controversial ones were fed back, and so on. Usually 3-4 rounds of Delphi that were time-consuming for both the distillers and the participants, and it took a long time until we got the input that we were looking for. By the time you got it, probably it was the policy making or the strategy was already observed somewhere along the road. So Seth Gordon and Adam Pearce came, and to most of you, Adam Pearce's name, I understood that it's really well known. So they were asked by DARPA to develop something, a kind of a Delphi that would accelerate and reduce the time of getting that input from the expert panel to almost real time, so in-time knowledge. We keep on talking about in-time knowledge, but everything drags for years or months when it's about taking a decision. Well, this one was designed in the sense of really getting in-time knowledge. It could sometimes take place when it is in a one-day session. So people will ask questions and then they were feeding back, and by the end of the day they got close to a consensus, or at least they got the median value or the value of the different course for questions or issues that were brought up. Since then, Ted's program continues to work on it, and we are improving it on a daily basis. Now, if you want to take a look at the prototype, you have it at realtimewebsite.net. We can disclose that Peter Ted and I were working on a prototype for the ontology summit already, but it was, I think, Fabian who mentioned the other day that the risk of showing the prototype or the draft is that people will think that this is it. They fill it out, and then when the real questionnaire comes, then they say, wait a minute, I already answered it. Although, in the real time, one of the big advantages that none of the other survey methods have is that people can come back, edit their own answers, continue the questionnaire whenever they feel like, see the average of the group all the time, so they can situate themselves. Well, they see the average of the group just for the questions that they already answered, and after they answer. However, if they think that they are too much off and they judge that maybe the other ones are right, they can change their own answer if they feel like. If they feel strong about their answer, that means that they are really good experts and they shouldn't change their view. I will get Gator to show you one of the screenshots of the prototypes that we were looking for. So one of the beauties, next slide, the description of the real-time design. So each cell that the questionnaire is designed as a matrix. The roles are the development, the questions, whatever we ask, the statements, and then the columns are the analysis, quantitative or qualitative or both. And why do we say that? Quantitative is because you can put a number in it. When will it happen, or what's the probability that it will happen, what is the importance of it rating 1 to 10, for example, and qualitative because in each cell, for each answer, being that numeric or not, the respondent is encouraged to give the reason behind their answer. And when they get to the page to give the reason, they see also the other reasons given by the members of the group. However, with no names attached, because the Delphi and the real-time Delphi in the spirit of the Delphi is completely anonymous. The responses are not attached to the name, to the person who said it, right? So that is less than an oblong discussion, because we don't look for pages of essays. The idea is to get a very clear and short answer, the reason. And the beauty is that the questionnaire is updated immediately after the response was submitted, and the respondent can submit one cell at a time, or fill out as much as they want of the questionnaire and submit the whole questionnaire at once by one click at the end. at the bottom of the questionnaire, it shows then the rating of one of the columns that we consider the most important. Let's jump to, Peter, where did you put the screenshot?
Hello? Yes. Slide number 10.
Please jump to slide number 10, and then we come back to the other one. Because here I can show you the very, very draft. So don't consider it at all. We don't like it. What we want from you is input. How would you like the columns to change? Here are three types of columns. Look at them also as possibilities. What is possible to fit in this questionnaire? For example, these questions and the statements are really just made up. We made them up to show an example. Ontology is taught in at least one department at most universities. Now here we get in the whole terminology issue and confusion. So I prefer to, I'm happy that we said it's taught. It doesn't say it's a program, it doesn't say it's a unit, it doesn't say course or model or whatever. If you want to define it, yes, we would be happy to put it in. And put in parentheses what do we mean by program. So if we want to ask, there is an ontology program that leads at one department, at most universities, then we define what that program means, not just of UK point of view or US or so. Because we don't want confusion, that's for sure. If the results of the questionnaire are only as good and as useful, then the terminology is clear. And everybody knows what they are talking about. Okay, let's say, ontology is taught at least in one department at most universities. We took the time frame that was defined at the beginning. So is it already happening? Then please explain. If you look at the bottom of the cell, it says, please explain your reasoning. Click here. That would take the respondent to a page where they can type in their reasoning and then come back exactly to this cell. After they type in their reasoning. The reason we put the text in other pages is really not to crowd the questionnaire. So the questionnaire remains as clear as possible. And those numbers that you see here, they are 75%, 85%, 100%, is, as I just made them up. As an example, yes, let's say that it's the probability that ontology will be taught in at least one department at most universities, is 75% that it will happen between now and the next 2.5 years, 85% in the next 5 years, or in 10 years, for sure ontology will be taught at most universities. Now, U.S. ontologists probably will disagree with that, and that's why the questionnaire is run among you, right? Then what would be the impact? In this case, probably it's not something that is very relevant, but for other developments, it might be very relevant that the impact of the respective development. And again, respondents are encouraged to give reasons. And then the last column asks about consequences. Which are the developments that might help the event or that might help that this development happens? And in a separate bracket to put section to put what are the developments or the events that this, if this development happens, will trigger. Because because we want to look also, okay, if this happens, then so what? And you are those who are most in the measure to say, and so on. Now, about the statements, that's what we are looking for together from this group. What are the statements, the developments? And now, please go back to slide number 8. It says, collection of judgments about when certain developments. I kept on talking about development. Now, what is the development in this case? Is it a fact, or a policy, or an event, or a step, will have a significant impact on the future of this field, or sector of activity, or for the world as a whole, actually. For example, declaring, accepting ontology as a science. This is a development, and it's a very, very important one. And I think that it should be included in the questionnaire. If ontology is accepted as a science and worldwide, and then when would that happen? And what would be the impact of it? It will be huge, probably. What will it trigger? Well, it will trigger that probably it will be taught in most universities. Probably PhDs also will be accepted and possible. If now they are possible, then probably if it's accepted as a science, and it might also impact further development of ontology. In which sense? And those are responses that we can collect. And the way we can use the output is extremely large, from getting a general view on what are the potentials in this field, potential futures in this field, to influencing decision-making, planning, developing strategies, use a cross-impact analysis, for example. That's very interesting. If this happened, then what? And what's the weight on different other aspects? And of course, for environmental monitoring. So what is going on, and what is expected to be going on? And next, I leave it to Peter.
Okay, so,
the biggest stage for the questionnaire. Peter, do you want to take this over?
Okay, all right. So that's a good segue for me to take over. Again, remembering our last week's session, we mentioned that we will try to look at the future from three different perspectives, from the market perspective, meaning we would survey get opinions of potential employers of ontologists. And then from the perspective of the educator, meaning people who would be providing training or providing education, and then from the perspective of the individual ontologist or people who are aspired to be ontologists. So, yes.
This is Todd. I want to suggest that if you like your what they now call adjacent markets to this, adjacent markets. You said one of the perspectives was looking at the marketplace for this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would suggest what are the adjacent areas where this sort of training will fall over into naturally.
Fantastic.
And as I mentioned before, many of the paradigms used for ontological development are also relevant for systems engineering. And I would think that unless the people in that area are very, very stupid, they would start adopting some of these paradigms. So some of the training that we are envisioning is also relevant and all could be run under the auspices of systems engineering, if you like.
Yes, that's one area Amanda will be addressing in the next segment. But I mean, that's important. Could you type that into the chat screen so that we get that documented and captured and we take that into consideration?
Will do.
So thanks. All right, so now we come to the interactive part both Elizabeth and my presentation. So I want everyone here to put your visionary hat on, because we are going to ask everyone a few questions so that you can help us provide us with some developments. We want to elicit developments from everyone here as experts so that we can use them for the real-time Delphi study. So, again, developments are single statements of impact. So think of, I mean, the impact it would be. So before we do anything else, I'm on slide number 12 now. So I will be asking questions, and I hope people could maybe take a minute and type them into the chat room. But before we do that, I would request that everyone type in the perspectives they are going to represent. So, I mean, for now, since this is not the real survey, you can't be all three people at the same time. Unless you have three different windows, then you can be like PDM 1, PDM 2, PDM 3, and each of them you represent a different perspective. But for now, if you have one avatar or one personality, then please type I'm representing the market or perspective or the educator perspective or the ontologist perspective. Please type that against your name, or type that in and then send that into the chat board, if you please. For everyone who's on the in the chat room now, just type, yeah. Okay, I guess.
Or there might be a general development that would go in all of them. There is Pierre, for example, already suggested a very nice development. Ontologists make a decent living, and that's a very good development. It's a very valid one.
Yes, so make sure whoever brought that up, I mean, type that in again when we ask those questions. All right. This next thing I would like to don't type answers yet. We haven't started the questions. So the next so just say you're representing the market, representing the educator's viewpoint or the ontologist or aspired ontologist viewpoint. The next thing I would like everyone to note when you are answering questions to pack them into time frames and explain, and if you're explaining your answer or you're making a certain statement, try to pack that into a time frame. So don't just say, make that statement with a certain time. So just don't say, ontology will be recognized as a science, but say, ontology will be recognized as a science, within 10 years or between 5 to 10 years, or it won't be recognized as a science anywhere within the next 25 years or something like that. So pack them into a time frame. All right. So I will sort of progressively bring up the question, but before you do the answer, please wait till I type the question into the chat room, then we can have everyone's answers in the same place. Okay, so give me a moment. I'm bringing up slide 13 now, and I will type the question into the chat room. So this is the question. What major developments What major developments do you foresee happening to the domain of ontology or to the ontologist profession over the following 20 years? Major developments, things that will have real impact. Nancy and Arturo has questions. So maybe Nancy first, if you do a star 3, please. Nancy, start three to unmute.
That was a mistake. Oh. That was a mistake.
Okay. Right. Click the hand button again, then you can lower your hand. Arturo?
Can you hear me, Peter?
Yes. Go ahead.
I just wanted to suggest that your question is too complex. It has two parts, A or B. Maybe you want to split it in two parts instead of one. Yes.
No, we are just soliciting single statements, like...
But you're asking A or B, so you don't know which one they're responding to.
So you mean whether it's the domain of ontology or the domain of or the ontologist profession?
Right.
Yes. Okay. So if people would let's say start with typing the developments in the domain of ontology first, and then if they have another answer or to the domain to the ontologist profession, then follow that up. With the question. Thank you, Arturo. So, anonymous person. Oh, by the way, if anyone who is still appears as anonymous, I would appreciate if you click on the settings button and then replace anonymous with your real name. That would be helpful. But the anonymous person who has his hand, his or her hands up, could you do a star three and then ask. No? Okay. All right. Question 1-2 for 20 years. Ravi, I don't quite understand. Oh, we are allowing any answer. Actually, answers are free form. Do whatever, respond in whatever way you like. So if that answers Ravi's question. All right. So I think that's pretty much the input we have got. It's sort of dwindling down. I will move on to the next question, but don't start typing the answer until I have the question up, if you please. So my next question, hang on, which I'm typing, what do you see as important emerging trends concerning ontology, ontologist, or ontology training, ontology education over the next 20 years? Important emerging trends. Again, if you can express that in a single statement. That would be helpful.
Peter, this is Leo.
Yes.
I had to reboot, so I'll have to restart.
Okay. All right, but whatever you have already sent in is still captured. So we won't lose the piece that you already had. All right. I can see the the responses dwindling down now. So I will put in the next question. So about how many ontologists or professionals doing work that requires ontology education or ontology training do you estimate the world will need over the next 20 years? So, I mean, you can give multiple answers. I mean, they will only need like 1,000 next year, but 10 million in 20 years or whatever. Pack them to make those statements by way of pegging them to certain time frames, if you can. Ravi, I noticed you have a Q4 answer. If you would kindly help us by waiting until I sort of pose the question and then answer below it. It will really help reduce the time we need to call the answers. But I thank you for at least prefixing your answer with the question. All right. So we've got a bunch of answers already. And if people are ready for the next question, what are the potential futures of ontology in academia? So is there a future? Is there a future for it to become a department, just courses that may be taught, and so on and so forth, maybe joint programs with related departments? So what kind of development can one dream of? In your wildest dreams, and then try to back it up with your personal insights and experience and vision, what kind of developments might occur. So Gary's question is, depend on the type of world we have. Well, we have the type of world that we now have, or what you project to be having in the number of years that you care to respond to. So I see question responses still coming in. I'm down. Ken and Ravi still have their hands on the keyboard. Yeah. Ken is done. Ravi, are we supposed to wait for you? Okay, let's do the next question then. Question number 5. What needs to happen between now and the day when we will have ontology departments in universities and enterprises? If you want to distinguish the ontology as a science and ontological engineering, you can, and please label those accordingly. So what will need to happen before that would happen? I assume very few companies have ontology departments or ontological engineering departments. So when would that happen? Oh, no, not when would that happen. What needs to happen between now and then to make it happen? Okay, I guess people are almost done. The next one actually is, people are not almost done. So I'll wait. Cameron, Gary, Joel, and Ravi's hands are still on the keyboard. Right? Still see huge amount of activities. In fact, when you are done, leave your edit window blank, then I would know you're done. Okay, now just Ken. So Ken, when you're done, then we will be able to move to the next question. All right. So, wow. Ken and Arturo. And the last question, the slide says seven. It actually is six. So please, that's Q6. I'll update the slides later. So if you were to educate the general public about ontology, what do you expect them to learn or know or to understand? A lot of things. I mean, if I talk to a lot of people, then the first thing they'll ask is, what is ontology? I presumably ontology as we are talking about it, ontology for information science and not ontology for metaphysics or philosophy. So obviously there's a lot that needs to be done to educate the public. What do we need to tell them, or what do you think they need to know before they would accept ontology or ontological engineering? So this is the last question Elizabeth and I have for today. And I definitely want to voice our appreciations for the huge amount of input that might help us move the study into the next step. Okay, I've got Fabian and Nancy and Terry still typing now, Pierre and Rafi too. Okay, Nancy is done. I still have Pierre and Terry. Yes, to answer Rafi, yes, that's question number 6. The slide says 7. That's a typo. Sorry. I'll update the slides. So by the time it goes to the recording, it will say 6. Joel, Rafi, and Terry still typing. Okay, thank you very much, Arturo. Thanks for the presentation and all the work behind the survey. Right, Rafi, you're last. Okay, thank you. Now Todd is typing. So once you're done, we will move on. So that completes sort of the quick solicitation from Elizabeth and myself, and thank you all, and whoever was speaking, you didn't come through very well. Okay. Try putting it on the chat board. Right, so on that, I will, someone trying to speak? No?
That might have been me, I just moved my microphone.
Okay, now you sound like Amanda. Great. So I shall hand the floor back to our co-chair, Dr. Amanda Weisbaum. And your floor, Amanda.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. Okay, so I actually am sneaking in two little things. In addition to feedback on this survey, I do want to give first a little bit of a peek at the additional kinds of survey questions that will be coming out of the requirements section. What we saw earlier were questions coming out of content and quality. The question of who to survey is intimately tied to the type of information we need to gather. So I would like to ask everyone, if you're on the wiki page for today's call, if you scroll down or search for parcel number 25LY, you can see the link for the page Ontology Summit 2010 Pertinent Questions, and I'd ask you to please click on that. And once you've got that page up, please scroll down to the section. Let's see if I'll find a personal number for you, but the section that is headed Suggested Survey Questions for Requirements Track Present from Amanda Weisbaum. The purple number is 25J9. This is not a complete, my survey questions are not all in the right form yet. in the, I should say, at the last week we saw a little bit, and at the very top of this page, there are also a short list of the kinds of questions that the track has a mission of answering, and they include lots of things about what skills oncologists need on the job, acquire on the job, what employers expect, and so forth. The section that I am pointing you to, suggested survey questions, is a portion of what I've developed to try and elicit that information. So it begins with trying to identify, what role the relevant to this, the respondent played, and as previously discussed, I imagine that this is something where people who wear multiple hats can answer multiple times, respective to those, each hat. The initial questions are sort of just getting a sense of where they're coming from, and then it goes into questions about how oncology relates to the primary goals and deliverables of the organization or project, and what those might be. So is this an oncology-oriented project or organization, or is the oncology an incidental, minor, or major part of something else that they're delivering? And then further down, starting to get into a sense of how many people they employ to do oncology work and whether that's a primary duty, whether they were hired specifically for that or were already there or hired based on other skills and expected to train up, what kind of training they have, and then moving down to what I've just started to enter here, what skills, in addition to what we think of as the core of ontology skills, the ability to do formal representation and understand inference with ontology, what else the ontologists in the organization have to do in order to perform their jobs. And so here I just briefly got a little starter sample of traditional programming, working with SMEs, working with data models. There's much more to add there that I'll be filling out. I wanted to give you a peek of that, though, because it's important to know that this is information that we want to gather because it provides a sense of what the requirements are for training ontologists. We know that there's an immense amount of knowledge in this community, the ontolog community, about people and organizations who have, use, or need ontologists who are not part of the ontolog community. And that knowledge comes out in many forms, including positive references to projects expressions of frustration brought on by the fact that many of us, at one time or another, have to work with or clean up after people hired to do ontology who do not have the needed knowledge and experience. We also see from the perspective of hiring organizations, I see, and I think some others do, frustration of their own. I think Barry referred to the fact this has come up in the OIC conference for years. Organizations who say, we don't have any internal ontological expertise, and we can't find any ontologists. So where do we get them? And part of the answer is that there may not be enough to go around right now, but part of the answer is that there is a persistent gap between the community of ontologists and the people and organizations who need them. Some of that is a gap in expectations. Some is a gap in communication. If our requirements gathering is going to be effective, in actually telling us what ontologists need to be trained in, we need to cross that gap. We need to solicit information of the sorts I just pointed at vaguely, which will be a little bit filled out in more depth, from the people that we do not normally include. And yes, actually, I want to just quickly address something that I see on the chat there. The labeling actually is, I think, additionally something we have to, that will be in the questions. I have one question drafted that actually asks, do you have people, you know, specifically working with these kinds of knowledge organization structures or skills, whether or not you call them ontologists? Another question is, what is the job title for the people who do X in your organization? You know, I've seen many cases where you will not find, you'll find many people working with ontologies whose titles do not have ontology or knowledge engineering or anything like it in them, and the advertisement for those positions also does not contain those words. So, gathering information about what people call what will be part of it. So, with all that preface, we now have a one-question interactive segment along the lines of what Peter just did. I am about I'm going to enter the question in the chat, and then I will ask you to respond to it by freeform telling us about anyone, any project, any organization from whom it would be useful to glean this information, and we should do some outreach to see if we can get somebody to do it. So, entering the question now, and we'll have a few minutes for you to type in as many answers as you can think of.
Could you read out the question also, just for
the
audio, for the audio recording?
I'm sorry. The question is, or the compound question is, to whom should we be talking? Whom should we be asking to complete this survey? These surveys, perhaps. While people are typing, I am also going to take the preface that I just spoke out and the questions themselves and initiate a thread on the requirements track thread of the mailing list. Nancy, I'm sorry, was that question directed at me? Or perhaps I'll say, Nancy, was that you?
Oh, I'm just throwing it out.
Okay. Let me say generally that I think the overall goal of the summit is to produce a fairly comprehensive body of content for that could be adapted to many different curricula and a few sample curricula for particular quality offerings at a couple of levels. So it's not necessarily the case that what we gather in this part of the information gathering will make its way directly into that. It may be the case that some of these double tasks are inappropriate, or that in our judgment, it may be that somebody does both, X and Y, but Y is not actually part of their role as an ontologist. That said, there are lots of people doing ontology under the label metadata management or I've recently learned that even a good number of folks who are self-identified and hired as taxonomists are beginning to extend their work with features that roll into the ontology territory, and so we may find that there are people in that community as well. I will say I see a lot of very general answers coming in. Probably wasn't clear enough about this. Those are great, but I'm also very much looking for specific organizations and people. So feel free to just type in, you know, World Bank, Concept Searching, you know, whoever, Tratcom, anyone like that. My own case would be an example because the team, I've started to get permission to say ontology within the Air Force environment, but the Air Force's ontologists are the Enterprise Vocabulary Team. And there has not traditionally been any word in the job description that would indicate that they were looking for ontologists. For example, if I were to introduce myself, I would say Air Force. Pierre's question, yes, actual contact if you have them. Organizations, people, anything, if you've just run into people and you know that you don't see them in the ontolog community, and they have needs and opinion on this, go ahead, throw them in. Yes, and certainly for those who don't have it at the fingertips now, the mailing list spread will provide a way to answer this later. Very good suggestions there. And for some of these questions, I may follow up with the suggestors when they're more general to see whether they have a contact that they think would be particularly good entry points into that community. Feel free to suggest if you're not sure, if you think they might be doing something relevant. That's okay. There's no harm in making the contact and seeing if they have something to contribute. Yes. Pierre, thank you. I'd forgotten about the ordnance survey. They're actually well published in the area. And then we've had some past ontology summit participants, recent ontology participants, who are today, and I don't think we're last week, so I think we'll certainly want to tap. I'm thinking maybe Michael Bennett it was in the financial industry. Don't worry about duplicates. We'll fill them out afterwards. Just go ahead and feel free to type without checking so that we get more typed in during our time. Yes. Thank you. Sarah Cognita, forgotten about that. Did notice that there.
So, Amanda, Peter,
yes.
Here. Did you ask people if they have mailing lists that they might help us forward the survey when we have
No, I did not. But that's a very good suggestion. I will, once we have the survey ready, I think we'll definitely make that suggestion on our mailing list. Make that an exchange request. Very excellent point. Yes, for those of you who do consulting in ontology, who are your clients is definitely part of the question. And it's one of the reasons that there is a depth of knowledge in this community, out, who else is out there. I think we're probably, we've got a few more people typing. We're probably starting to wind down. So I will, while people are continuing to type, I will put my co-chair hat back on. We have, our agenda has, I don't see it there anymore. We had, I think, a final wrap segment on the agenda just have a few minutes for open, for some open commentary on the session or what people want in the future, and also to remind people of what we have for the calendar of what's coming up in the future. I think that Peter is bringing us back to the home page where we can find all these things. Right, there's five that I was thinking of. The open discussion on what the community wants. Well, we don't actually have 30 minutes left, but I don't have active conclusion follow-up to say other than just allowing people to close this out. I think perhaps taking a look at the sessions coming ahead would be helpful as a reminder, and then opening the floor for any close-out comments. Probably be the best plan. Peter, does that sound good to you?
Sounds great. Yeah, I'll bring up the calendar again. One thing to mention is the February 11th date is still subject to change, but all the other dates are pretty much locked in. So mark your calendars, please.
Peter, is there any possibility that that change in the panel session form would actually involve swapping it with another one? Something else might change too.
That's something we could discuss at the organizing committee meetings.
I'm just wondering whether that would mean that actually something else might change as well. Okay.
So far into the future, I guess anything is possible. Except that, I mean, the March 15th and 16th are very well locked in because we are part of the NIST Interoperability Week. So they've got other things in the middle as well, so we can't change those two dates. And anything before that is flexible.
All right. So following on today's session, organizing committee will be working to get the surveys and Delphi ready to go as soon as we can, and announcing its availability. And as suggested, we will then look for help to forward that, and I will also do some outreach following the suggestions here. Then I'm not sure exactly what our timeline is on the getting responses back, and Peter and Elizabeth addressed that somewhat, but that will continue to inform the other sessions going forward. We will also continue this thread on the demand list. So the floor is open for any closing comments and questions. If anybody wants to raise your hand in the chat room, and if you have a line somewhere. Yes.
Ravi here.
Hello, Ravi.
Yeah, thank you for the wonderful last segment of what we just started. As 5 or 7 questions, I guess. And this was great, great ad hoc input, but I was just wondering how we'll go about analyzing the part that you just asked, namely the sources and context, and what would be the purpose to contact them? Is it just survey as a limited purpose or wider input into the other aspects of the Council Law 2010 Summit?
That's a good question, and I think that actually the immediate purpose would be the survey, but I would not be at all surprised see some of those contacts expand, because it's my experience that some of these people just have no idea that this community exists and would love to be connected. They really are more serious about oncology, and they would really like to be more involved. And so it would not surprise me if some of the folks actually learned a lot from doing the survey about who we are, about the existing larger community, and decide to
be common sense. Approach the type of surveys, and people say, oh, no, not another one. And so we have to be aware of sensitivity and put it in a proper way so that people will want to respond.
Absolutely. And for the industry side, I think that that's actually fairly straightforward to do, because it's, no lie, no kidding. What we're actually trying to do here, to some extent, what we're gathering is information about what it is that they need that they're having trouble getting. So I think it should be...
The counter question, Amanda, sorry to butt in again with another rejoinder, that is, I'm always asking the question to myself, am I really an ontologist? And answer is really still not yet. So how do others address that question? I would be interested in that.
Yes, and that's actually something I have built in a little bit to some of the questions that are already up there, but have more drafted just to get to that audience. And some of that's inspired actually by our recent experiences at Taxonomy Bootcamp, discovering the number of people there who are doing what they think is, illicit extension of their taxonomies to make them actually do what they need to do. And what they're actually doing is becoming ontologists.
Wow. That's wonderful. Thank you.
So we've no hands up, so I guess it's free for all unless it gets crowded. We have about 4 minutes left, I think.
One more thing, then, since no one is speaking, is that we don't these days ask people who go into high school whether they study Dirichlet algebra or not, or calculus, etc., which earlier we used to ask when we graduated, at least from the time frame I was studying long time ago. So as the knowledge domains expand, when will this become a new question, like ontology as a technique, technology, or a discipline, knowledge management paradigm will become so well known that people will stop asking that question? Or will it morph into some other adjective like knowledge management?
I want to briefly address a comment that Cameron just brought on the chat. Cameron, I think exactly, and to the extent that some of us think we do, we don't agree. So it doesn't mean that the end result will be a free-for-all of the sort that Barry most fears. He's not here to give voice to that. But I hope vehemently that this will help us get a better self-understanding of what this field is.
Perhaps that question will stay open, what Cameron asked, and I also asked the same. Perhaps that will stay open because there is no one way to answer that probably.
Oh, I think it will stay open all the way to the end of the... It's something, I mean, that in terms of the, on the quality track, very brought up directly, this one of the problems is that we don't have a good self-understanding, and in his view, a primary consequence of this is that we let anybody do anything under the header. I might not put it that way, but it's certainly the case that one doesn't know if one hires an ontologist what they can do, and one doesn't know if one is an experienced ontologist whether one has the right skills for a different ontology job. And that's not the whole story of this understanding, but it's a couple of ways of looking at it that we can try and get a better handle on through this mechanism.
But two categories are very acute. There's those who fund for results, and certainly people like venture capitalists who fund. So recruiters who have to show that the recruited people produce some results. So these categories of people will drive at least the market aspect of demand for ontology. The other areas of academics have been there for the last 5,000 years, and the subject of ontology itself started.
Okay, so looks like we are getting close to the time limit.
Yep.
Peter,
is it possible that we can close the session but allow the chat to run a little over for straggling things that people have on their minds and don't want to lose?
Well, sure. That's a good suggestion.
Thank you, Peter. I'm signing off.
All right. So we'll keep the chat board open for another 15 minutes for final thoughts, and I will close that in 15 minutes. So back to you, Amanda.
Wonderful. And I will also, post the topic, the initiative thread, on the mailing list as well. Thank you, everybody. It's been an enormous amount of very useful input. And we look to the continuing asynchronous portions of the Ontology Summit on the mailing list and on the wiki pages. And to talking to you again on the 14th of January.
Thank you.
Okay. Signing off, closing out the phone portion of this session.
Yes.
See you all.
Bye-bye.